We begin with a look tactically on how the U.S. might proceed in Iraq from a military mind that has fresh memories of what went wrong in Iraq and Afghanistan. General David Barno was the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan from 2003 to 2005. He is now a senior fellow and co-director of the Responsible Defense Program at the Center for a New American Security. He says because of our recent experience in the region, it will be a challenge to keep U.S. involvement and confrontation with ISIS from becoming an all-out military operation.
What we've seen so far, frankly, I come from a career in the United States Army. What we're seeing so far is that the fact that ISIS is so powerful on the ground, they don't have an Air Force, they don't have a Navy, but they've got an incredibly capable military force on the ground that's, to our great surprise, pushed back the Kurdish Peshmerga. They pushed back the Iraqi security forces and decimated a number of their units. They've had a lot of success against Assad's forces in Syria. They're very capable as a land army. And that's very worrisome because we are not in a position where we want to commit boots on the ground to repel them. But there's going to have to be some force on the ground, in my judgment, to push them back out of these areas that they've taken over. It's not going to work by simply applying bombs and drones to the problem set.
Osama bin Laden sends planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and it took months and then years, if you include Iraq, to mobilize against al-Qaeda. We're already there now.
Well, I think this foreign fighter issue with ISIS is very worrisome, and I know the intelligence agencies have been talking about that for months. It's only now started to get out in the public square and has gotten some traction. But there are, by many estimates, as many as 3,000 foreign fighters that have come mostly out of Europe, but some from the United States, and joined ISIS in Syria and now potentially in Iraq. The worry about them is not what they're going to do in Syria and Iraq, but the worry is that they'll take those passports and come home to Western Europe or to the United States and begin a follow-on campaign there that's a terror campaign against, you know, our values and our national security among our allies in Western Europe as well as here at home. So I think that's extremely worrisome. I think Europe has a much bigger problem there, simply in numbers alone, than the United States has. But all the intelligence agencies are watching this very carefully.
Are we ready for that? I mean, this fellow that they found who came from the United States who was killed in the fighting with al-Nusra, are we ready for these folks coming home for Thanksgiving?
I think that's a very high bar challenge for our border security, for the Department of Homeland Security, our controls on passengers coming on airline flights. That's going to be very difficult. Again, our problem is probably considerably more defined and smaller than that of the European nations. There's overland transit routes to Europe coming through Turkey, and there's a problem right now with jihadis that are actually passing through Turkish loose border controls and getting into Eastern Europe. Those could easily show up in the capitals in London or Paris here in a month or two, and I think that's very worrisome to the European governments. They have a much more difficult problem set than we do, but ours is tough enough.
Does the Pentagon have a view on what might happen if ISIS attempts a terrorist attack either in Europe or the United States, in the sense that is the Pentagon more likely to say, look, we don't want to get into a tit-for-tat response situation on the ground in a place like Iraq if there's an attack in the United States? We want to be more strategic. Or are they inclined to say, hey, we're here, whatever you want, we'll deliver?
Well, I think what the role of the U.S. military is here is to provide the president with a broad range of different options that go from doing what we're doing now or less all the way to, major combat operations in the region. And the president needs to know what he can do if something that horrific were to happen. So I'm sure there's contingency planning going on to think about how the U.S. would employ much greater levels of force than we're doing today. But clearly, after the last 13 years of prolonged wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, nobody in the military is pushing for that option. But if it comes to the point where the United States is attacked again, I think all bets are off.
Is there a preventive strategy before we go here in dealing with ISIS, in the sense that we do have the opportunity here to do something that would prevent the kind of 2001 scenario that we've already experienced and already produced the problems that make the Pentagon pause in going back into war? What's the preventive strategy as you see it?
I don't think it's that clear-cut, unfortunately. I've seen a lot of discussion about whether we should take a targeted attack against the leadership of ISIS to try and knock out the chiefs in the organization before they can mobilize to do more attacks outside of the Middle East. I'm not sure that would be effective, and I think in some ways it might even be counterproductive. So I think we have to be a little bit more cautious and deliberate on how we contain the ISIS threat. ISIS and al-Qaeda are different, and not only in terms of how radical ISIS is, which is more than al-Qaeda, but ISIS is holding territory. They have ground forces and mobilized, you know, military capability there that we can actually see. They're trying to put governance in place in a number of these locations. They're not going to be a shadowy organization that hides out in some other nation's cities in the Middle East. They're going to actually own a nation state of some sort that they're trying to create. So I think we're going to have to look at this a little bit differently. And I'm not convinced in my own mind right now that targeted attacks against their leadership are really going to buy us the kind of protection that we hope.
General David Barno, top U.S. commander in Afghanistan from 2003 to 2005, now a senior fellow and co-director of the Responsible Defense Program at the Center for New American Security. Thanks so much, General.
Thanks, John.
So al-Qaeda expelled ISIS earlier this year for being too radical, a signal that the U.S., Syria, and the world were dealing with something fundamentally different. As the general points out, compared to the loose bargain basement remote control al-Qaeda run from caves in Pakistan, communicating by hand messages delivered by couriers on donkeys, ISIS is into governance, is flush with cash, and operates openly. William McCants helped formulate policy on dealing with al-Qaeda when he was a State Department advisor. He's now director of the Project on U.S. Relations with the Islamic World at the Brookings Institution. William McCants, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what's keeping ISIS afloat aside from, you know, their well-produced videos? Where are they getting the money, for instance?
ISIS gets a lot of its money from kidnappings, from the towns that they control. They charge taxes and extort local businessmen. They get a lot of money from oil wells that they control in eastern Syria. Not much of the money comes from abroad, surprisingly. Most of the money they're able to generate themselves, which makes them a particularly strong threat. If a lot of their money came from abroad, you could do more to tighten up regulations and crack down on those people sending money. The fact that they're able to generate their money on their own means that it's going to be more difficult to cut off their sources of funding.
So compared to the Wizard of Oz, Osama bin Laden behind the curtain sort of smoke and mirrors, ISIS is a self-sustaining entity, almost like a corporation.
That's right. Both of them function like corporations, but ISIS much more so because it controls territory and they're more out in the open than al-Qaeda ever was. Al-Qaeda was a classic clandestine terrorist organization. ISIS is an insurgent group and almost bordering on a formal military organization. They are very sophisticated and they're doing a lot more than trying to just take territory. They're trying to govern it.
And we'll talk about the governance in a moment, but if they have oil wells that they fully own and they're not getting money from overseas, there's really no way to squeeze off the financial connections, right? Unless you actually go into Syria and take back the oil wells, for instance.
That's right. There's no easy way to do this. You can't do it just with air power alone. You're going to need to have some sort of force on the ground that is going to be able to take this territory back from ISIS. That doesn't mean deploying U.S. troops, but you need to have a capable proxy to operate through. And so far, the U.S. doesn't have one in Syria.
But somebody's brokering that oil and tossing it into the, you know, global pool. Is there a way to attack them?
Well, they're not tossing it back into the global pool. The ISIS militants are actually selling it back to the Syrian military. Or they could even be selling it sometimes to other insurgent groups or to just locals who need the material. So they're not tied into the global market, and they're getting poor rates for the oil. But nonetheless, for a small insurgent organization like theirs, the money is plenty.
That's interesting. They're getting poor rates. They're selling bottom dollar because they need the money and the cash, and they're not interested in making profits. So that really is disruptive to the market on a small scale, and on a larger scale could be really, really disruptive if they get, for instance, access to oil wells in Libya, right?
That's true. And they also, because they have a large military and have pushed into Iraq, they border countries that do control serious oil installations, such as Saudi Arabia. Now, ISIS doesn't have the capability to defeat the Saudi army, which is armed to the teeth with very effective U.S. military technology. But even if ISIS just pushed in there, launched a raid of some sort, sending in 100 vehicles, it would really scare the global oil markets.
That is interesting. All right, let's end on the governance question. It's a curious form of governance to go into villages and behead people. I mean, as a hearts and minds mission, ISIS has some work to do if they're going to really get a constituency on the ground.
That's right. And that's been the big head scratcher for outside observers. This goes back to the tension between al-Qaeda in Iraq and al-Qaeda Central, run by bin Laden and now Zawahiri. Back in the 2000s, Ayman Zawahiri, who was the deputy of al-Qaeda, asked Zarqawi, who ran al-Qaeda in Iraq at the time, to chill with the beheadings, explaining that while technically they were legitimate in terms of public relations, they were a disaster. He also chided Zarqawi for not working more closely with non-jihadis in order to shore up popular support for al-Qaeda's mission. Zarqawi ignored his advice, and his descendants, his heirs in the organization, are following Zarqawi's line. They are very brutal when they take over a town. They're not following classic insurgent techniques of trying to win over hearts and minds. And as a result, they often end up alienating the people they seek to dominate.
But if they succeed on this governance question going forward, they could end up back in the al-Qaeda sort of umbrella, and they could sort of realign with al-Qaeda, which would have other sort of strategic implications for the United States.
That's true, but it's difficult to see that happening because there was such a sharp break between the organizations. ISIS was not kicked out primarily because it was more radical than al-Qaeda. It was kicked out because it disobeyed Zawahiri's direct order publicly, and that kind of insubordination couldn't be tolerated, and he will look very weak if he allows them back in the organization.
William McCants, former State Department advisor on violent extremism, now director of the Project on U.S. Relations with the Islamic World at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.